years ago he was. I actually knew him personally. Whether he's doing so now, it would be imprudent of me and actually inaccurate of me to say. And we have a comment from Mishurnik on this.
Well, I understand that the Cannabis Club here does not give out free cannabis to the AIDS patients.
That's true, as of January 15th, I believe, or some such thing.
Yeah, I think, if AIDS patients are under Medi-Cal, Medicare, whatever, that, and since it is set up for patients and they are receiving it, I would think that these people do deserve, because they don't have much time left on this earth, maybe they should get it paid for. And I know that it's expensive, and the people here can't just foot the bill. So I think maybe there should be some kind of bill passed that these people can get it for free.
It would be nice if we could even make it legal to get. Right now it's completely illegal, thanks to Governor Wilson and the DEA, which mostly Governor Wilson in California, although it is, of course, being winked at here in Santa Cruz, San Francisco, and I guess possibly in Los Angeles and a few other cities where cannabis clubs are starting up. There is a practice here in Santa Cruz. I believe you can work for an hour. If you do an hour's worth of work, you can get cannabis for that hour's worth of work from the cannabis club here. And I wish I had the number of the cannabis club. I don't know if I could give it out to anyone listening over the air. Actually, we're going to have that in just a moment. Another public service announcement while we're waiting is Arts for People, the Atelier Gallery at 320 Cedar Street, right next to the bakery, is having a show. They're having a production of Walls, an original theatrical experience. It runs the January 18th through the 21st, as to say yesterday, today, tomorrow, and the next day, with images garnered from the imagination of street-seasoned youth under the brush and direction of gallery director John Tepley. The gallery and over 50 feet of its walls will be transformed into a living experience of life on the streets. In this environment, performed by veteran actors under the direction of Timothy McCauley, a series of theatrical events will be created to express these encounters. Participation, input, and supervision by the youth themselves is basic to the creative structure of the making of the production of Walls. For a full day on January 20th, that's tomorrow, under the captivating direction of multi-talented singer, songwriter, and performer Alexa, a continuous, extravagant musical tapestry will be woven at the Loudoun Nelson Community Center. Main auditorium, immerse yourself, celebrate and dance. The threads of acoustic guitar, wind instruments, and drumming featuring the world beat sounds of Barnyard and Garland will create an exceptional communal exchange of energy all will enjoy throughout the day. These two events will culminate in a community reception to be held after the final performance of Walls on January 21st, 1996, at the Atelier Gallery, again, that's right next to the bakery on the corner at Cedar and Maple Streets. Proceeds from the two performances and tax-deductible donations will be given to several very worthy local agencies and groups assisting the homeless and homeless teens in our community. We appreciate any assistance and donations offered, and contact the Atelier Gallery at 429-9005 for any questions. That's 429-9005, and you can leave a message at 425-4406. That's 425-4406. With everyone's help and support, this will be a successful event. It's signed Timothy McCauley, Arts for People. And I guess from 3 to 10 tomorrow, Arts for People, again, is going to be having Alexa with special guest appearances by Dana Hudson of Pele Juju and Medicine. Phil Free, the Coveralls, with drumming and dancing at the Loudoun Nelson Community Center Main Auditorium. And if you have, again, more questions about that, give a call, 429-9005. I also know that it says 10:50 in advance and 12:50 on the day of the show, so I don't know if they're going to let low-income people in. I hope they will, but if you show up, maybe you'll get in. It is, it's always a possibility. It's always a bummer when you don't get in because you don't have the bucks. Mishurnik has handed me the Santa Cruz Cannabis Buyers Cooperative phone number, and we were talking about medical marijuana and the continuance of the Robbie Berlin trial for growing medical marijuana here in Santa Cruz, for which he faces a number of years in jail. I think it's 2 to 4 years, something like that. Not quite sure the exact time, but it was felonies, two serious felonies at least. And the medical marijuana number, for those of you who want medical marijuana and need it, it's 429-8819. Give them a call at 429-8819. We were talking about Berkeley and what was going on up there with People's Park, and this article I read you from the East Bay Express earlier, and how the city council in Berkeley, in essence, has surrendered on a number of the restrictions, the throwing out of the food not bonds, the leveling of the field. All these things are not going to be done. But on the basic point of giving the university control over that area, apparently there was a surrender there. They're not seeking a lease, and they're not seeking to buy the property, and the community is trying to press them into doing that and press the city into doing that. Well, there are other things happening in Berkeley as well. I talked to civil rights attorney Bedrock Beauvais, as I call him, or David Beauvais, as he calls himself. There have been a number of lawsuits arising out of police beatings, harassment, and civil rights appropriation of People's Park activists.
What's up with that?
People's Park, glad you asked me that question, Ms. Shrumick. In fact, feel free to interrupt me at any time. There were a number of lawsuits because a number of people were beaten up, they shot with rubber bullets, maced, simply ran off the property without good reason. And so far, all the civil suits, there have been very few. I think there were one or two cases of people actually convicted of crimes. There were dozens, if not scores, of others who were dismissed or acquitted, and therefore, in essence, showing that the police did not have significant cases in those, in the eyes of the legal system and of the community, which is not that radical in Berkeley these days. Unfortunately, the attempts to get financial redress from the university and from the city for people who are injured by police, either university police or city police, has not been as successful. And case after case, federal juries have turned down the attempt to get money damages. Now, there seems to be a case in state court that has been, that began trial on Monday in, I believe it is it Hayward or Martinez, I think it is, tried by attorney David Beauvais, involving a 1991 vigil. They had a candlelight vigil on the sidewalk next to People's Park. And this involved activists Carol Denny, Bob Nichols, David Globman, and others. Cops claimed that the sidewalk was closed to the public as part of a 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. curfew in the park. So the vigil moved across the street for a long time in order to be, quote, legal. But it was brought to the university and city attention that the vigilers should be able to do it on the sidewalk next to the park. It was a First Amendment activity. They weren't actually in the park. It was public property and so forth. So Daniel Bogan, who is a university employee, wrote a letter to the city manager of Berkeley saying that the sidewalk was open to the public, and as long as people didn't commit a crime, they could use it. Well, on the same evening that he wrote that letter, cops told people they had to leave and started pushing people into the street. And then they arrested two activists, Bob Nichols and Bob Sparks, an activist who has since died, for trespassing. So, interestingly enough, all this illegal police activity, this unconstitutional police activity, was caught on videotape, and the university is being sued, the university police are being sued by the defendants through their attorney, David Beauvais, and other attorneys. Osha Newman is another attorney doing this. He's a former police review board member, as well as a longtime fighter for the rights of people in Berkeley. And they have a judge named Dunbar, whose rulings apparently are giving the plaintiffs, in this case, which is the activists, a lot of leeway. They estimate a 6-day trial, but with a Monday through Wednesday trial schedule, we'll go into the next couple of weeks. And there are going to be 15 to 20 defense witnesses. The main defendants are cops, including the notorious Takaoka, whom Linda Edwards complained had molested activist Carol Denny. There was actually a wanted poster released on Takaoka, who's a university police officer. They're being sued for violation of a civil code, interference with constitutional rights using force, coercion, or intimidation. State law 51.7 allows a civil penalty of $25,000 for violating people's rights for a discriminatory purpose. And actually, that's close to the same section of the Homeless Civil Rights Act, which is the act that, by the way, homeless people should consider using when they're dumped out of restaurants or kicked out of Stuart Martin's ID building because they're, quote, homeless. You cannot discriminate against an entire class of people, whether it be black people or women or disabled people or homeless people. If it's clear, that's the basis on which you're being discriminated against. This actually may provide a financial victory for both the plaintiffs, I should say, the the activists who are suing this, the police, and for the lawyers, which they really need. These lawyers have been taking cases for free since time immemorial, since, you know, history began. And I just wanted to bring up that case. And Mr. Schoenig, any comments on that?
Well, I don't know. I think justice is justice, and I think we should start abiding by the laws, and we can use them. You know, if you know what's going on, and bigotry should be dead by now. And you know, why are we shooting our own people? Why are we clubbing our own people? This never made sense to me in the '60s when I saw all this going on. That, you know, these aren't our enemies; these are our own people. You know. And if they want to protest, I think a peaceful protest is what's in line. And you don't have to shoot people or mace people for the things like that.
No, or shove them out the sidewalk or arrest them, so forth. Here's a brief interview with a man named Mike Girth, who is another victim of Java House discriminatory policies, or so he contends. So you can hear his view. I interviewed him about a month and a half ago at the farmer's market.
Honest man here on the streets. I'm talking to meandering Mike Girth, a man who I first met at the Town Clock Peace Vigil, what, 1991?
Wow, 1991 through 92 until they kicked us all off.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Actually, they kicked us off about May of 91 when they passed the Town Clock curfew. You may remember that.
I remember it very vividly. You cannot go through it from sunrise to sunset. And then they tried some weird hours between 8:30 until 6:30 in the morning.
It was from 1 in the morning to, I think, 5 in the morning.
Yeah. One thing I have to find it very unusual, even though that we weren't the cleanest, but we weren't the filthiest, and how poorly maintained like a symbol like the Town Clock is supposed to be. And even now, they're still trying to fix the clock to it. It's been broken for several months.
I had this construction up around the clock, I know.
Still.
Now,
there
was a controversy at the Java House. Do you ever get back into the Java House?
Everybody need to listen to this. Java House, long controversy. It was a nice place to hang out for all kind of people in the beginning. It was supposed to be this concept where people who are nice and cool can go and socialize and get pumped full of caffeine. I don't know about you, but if I got two or three cups of coffee in me, I can't sit still. Granted, I'll go over and visit someone if I introduce myself politely and say, "Hi, I'm Mike, can I sit with you?" Mm-hmm. After a while, this wasn't a good policy anymore, considering the diverse classes going in there, considering you were definitely people who had very little money, and so people who had lots of money wanted to drop a lot of money on a $3 espresso drink and a $4 piece of lasagna.
Did people actually complain about your behavior, or did you get 86 by the management because they didn't like what you were doing?
I've never heard a complaint referring to my behavior, although ironically I was 86 by the management, allegedly due to my behavior and to allegedly for taking in narcotic substances on the corner, which I completely
denied. Narcotic meaning marijuana or hard heroin, are we talking?
No, we're talking I was pointed out by the city planning commission, head of the city planning commission, if you might have heard of him recently in the news.
Oh, really? Peter Castleberger, whatever his name is, the guy who is now being charged with growing marijuana plants, felony.
I wouldn't say charged. I heard he got a nice little slap on the wrist, and that's about it. I mean, if it was you or I, we'd probably be in the butthole circus by now.
Was it him, or was it one of the planning commission that saw you there?
I recognized him because I remember being upset a month later, attending a planning commission and seeing the same man who alleged that I had been smoking. Imagine, this is very early in the morning, and I don't know about most people, but I can't deal with it.
Now, we're talking about marijuana smoking outside, half a block away from the restaurant.
Oh, it's a full block. I mean, I wasn't involved, but
outside
still.
And away from the very hip Java House, whose owner, Kevin, I call him Kick Him Out Kevin.
You call him Kick Him Out Kevin?
I kick him out Kevin. He's still kicking him out. At least he's still there. He's kicked out.
I look at it this way. If you don't want me to come and visit your establishment, then I give you that right and leave. However, you justify your right. I'm not going to give you a hard time. But
have you been back to the Java House since?
I haven't been back. Actually, it's been, 4 years.
Right.
I felt it unnecessary to continue hanging out in an establishment that, you know, accuse me of something without even asking me first. Second of all,
Kevin is also a marijuana smoker. It seems somewhat hypocritical for him to be accused of you
and
others.
I've never indulged with him, but I heard rumors.
Right.
I've heard rumors. I can't testify because I've never been with him.
Right.
But
that's
I've heard rumors.
From others.
Yes. I can say definitely one thing. I've never heard a complaint or anyone complain about my behavior of making eye contact and making a friendly greeting to join someone at a table. But I've noticed other people who've worked there being upset that was encouraged. And I found it unusual how when it first opened up, I was encouraged by Kevin, no less, to be sociable, being a basically shy guy that I am at first.
Well,
I just find it very unusual. Well, look at it this way. If you're going to have a place that, you know, call HIP, you know, define what HIP is. I mean, there's been one cafe in town when you're loud smoking. I mean, my friend here is a constant smoker, and you can't smoke anywhere in this town that serves food. You know, everybody has rights to breathe, the rights to do what they want. As far as the Java House, I hear it's nice. I just never bother going back or even trying. I feel I don't have to grovel. If someone was to want me there for whatever reason, whether it's realistic, non-realistic, legal or illegal, I just won't bother.
I think you and One Ton Dave shared the same fate, and of course I too was evicted from the Java House.
You were?
Yes, I was. In fact, they arrested me for trespass when I went back in.
Wow.
So that's the Java House, folks, in case you want to ask them why they evict homeless activists. Both myself, you, Mike, at the time, and I believe One Ton Dave were, you might classify us as homeless activists.
Very. No one ever cited me as such. He cited me as some you know, impoverished person who was obviously on the streets, who occasionally hung out the time clock, although I hung out very much. I never got singled out, as One Ton and a few others had, which at the time was really upset. Now, looking back and seeing all the harassment they got and everywhere they went, especially in the area, I'm kind of glad that they didn't.
Well, I think for the purpose of our listeners knowing, the town clock peace vigil was initially a vigil protesting the Iraqi genocide, U.S. participation in the murders in Iraq by the military, but it became eventually a protest against police abuse and misconduct in Santa Cruz and the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban.
It's about time. I mean, I'm a pro. I mean, I have to admit, on occasions, after I'm working up at the Homeless Garden Project for many years, I've listened to your show, and out of all the shows, I think you're the one who's more in-depth of facts and fact-finding. And I am appalled at anybody who has the audacity to be a public servant would even consider abusing their power and bringing harm to anyone just because they're low income or seemingly, quote, troublemakers because they can't afford to live in a decent setting the way we all should.
I give them sleeping tickets.
I mean, troll bashings. I mean, come on, let's be face
it. Have you heard anything recently, Mike, about harassment or of people or beatings of people, troll bashing?
Recently in the news? No. I've heard on your show, and I'm appalled. I'm sorry. I've studied law, and I was inches within becoming a state trooper back east. And that is, you do not abuse power, and that's something we all need in our society. You know, we need checks and balances. And there's no way just because a man carries a woman carries a gun, a badge, and a nightstick makes them God. And that's bullshit for anything else. And I'm sorry.
I appreciate anything final you want to say.
Finally, I look at it this way: if we all respect each other in the limits, you know, everybody can pretty much get by. That's all that matters.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
I
like listening to your show.
Yeah, there's a satisfied customer, meandering Mike Girth, as I called him, when he was a regular at the Town Clock with Red Top Robert Flory and One Ton Dave Jacobs when they were protesting police abuses in Santa Cruz and military abuses against the Iraqi people under Bush's Operation Desert Swine. Oh, no, Storm, I think it was. Mushroomic, what do you have to say?
Well, being a natural doctor, I did find out some things about that all the people who were injected, who went into Desert Storm, are dying from this injection, and that when the Swiss came back years ago to go over the area, that there was toxic chemicals put out by Hussein all over the place. And
Hussein, I heard it was also by U.S. And their weapons as well.
Well, I think if you just, I said many kinds, there's so much that who's to say who owns what anymore or who bought it from where, but I'll tell you what, I'm seeing thousands of people dying and that's sick. There's going to be 100,000 people dead in the next 10 years, quicker than Agent Orange for the people in Vietnam.
Well, I understand there have been tens, if not hundreds of thousands, have died because of the U.S. embargo on medical and other supplies to Iraq. Currently that's being protested. I think massive protests are being mounted. I guess it's in February, and Ramsey Clark and others are urging that people support lifting of the embargo to Iraq, which essentially has not had an impact on eliminating Saddam, or at least not an effective and sufficient impact, but rather has its effect on the poor in the large cities and throughout the country. But that is not something I'm really prepared to talk about today, but I did come with notes about a hemp activist, Pebbles. Pebbles and I were working together in the early 80s for a group called Joint Effort News. Is that right? Joint Effort. They put out a publication about cannabis. Of course, many of us have over the decades trying to re-legalize hemp we legalize marijuana. And Pebbles has been a particularly outspoken advocate. She's gone to jail for months and months and months because she told me right before last on a call, which I wasn't able to record, but I did take notes on, she brings her marijuana into court. She brings her joints right up to the judge. And she says, she pulls them out of her pocket and she shows them to the judge every court appearance she goes to, according to her, and says, this is my medicine. I will use this medicine. I will continue to use this medicine. It is my right to use this medicine. She is a woman of great courage who is prepared to go to jail, nasty jails, I might add, state prisons, for periods of time that I would frighten me to death, I'll tell you. She's. You want to say something, or should we go ahead?
Yeah, reminding me that today is Chris's court date.
Chris. Oh, Chris Brazda.
Yeah.
That's Crossroads Chris Brazda, a homeless activist who was doing a lot of writing on the net about the open-air shelter crisis and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless sellout of the homeless people. What do we know about Chris's court date? What's that about?
I really don't know that much. He told me to come by at around 11 o'clock at one of the three courtrooms, and I'm sorry, Chris, I'm here.
Well, interesting enough, it's also Pebbles' court date. She has a court date up in Contra Costa County Superior Court before Judge Richard Patsy, of all people. But she's a real patsy in this case. She's expecting 2 to 4 years in prison today because I guess the charge that she's being accused of, or that is hanging over her, has to do with transporting marijuana. She felony transportation of marijuana. She was transporting, I think, a pound of low-grade weed for medical purposes.
So that makes her a holy hemp sister.
Yes, sir. I would say so. Pretty holy. The judge excluded the doctor's testimony. Pebbles has pointed out that the laws are unconstitutional because there's a lack of medical access and there's no access to a necessity defense. We're hoping that's different, of course, in the case of Robbie Brown down here with Ed Fry when the court reconvenes on February 5th. But what happens to Pebbles up in Contra Costa County, we'll have to find out. I'm hoping she'll call me later today. She points out that the laws are cruel at the very least. Other prescription drugs are much more dangerous. Marijuana, from which marijuana comes, is a protected drug, but marijuana itself is not. The plan is banned. She was hoping to have attorney Tony Serra represent her at the sentencing hearing. And Tony is, of course, a famous marijuana lawyer. He's trying to get her a continuance. The judge has treated her like shit, according to her, and because he's prejudiced against improper litigants, litigants who try to represent themselves. And she's going to be, she showed up this morning at 8:30 a.m. We don't know quite what happened. And there was actually a Fremont Bombs support demonstration leaving from 16th and Mission this morning in San Francisco. That's up in San Francisco, going up to Martinez in Contra Costa County, where this trial is being held.
Thank God.
Now, according to her, the doctor's testimony, which was excluded from the trial, so she couldn't do a necessity defense, won't be excluded from sentencing. The jury can hear her doctor say she needs the marijuana. She could get released on her own, or she could get 2 to 4 years. She's operating on the basis of the Roe versus Wade principle, she says, based on privacy. The Supreme Court upheld that right based on the sanctity of the doctor-patient privacy relationship in the decision Roe versus Wade way back in the early days, of, I guess it was mid-60s. Or no, it was 70, 73. With marijuana, there's no harm at all. I mean, with an abortion, you are at least considering endangering life or potential life. But the same principle of privacy applies. And prescription access is her solution to this whole thing. And there was a bill by Miller and Marx in the state legislature here that were passed, but then they were vetoed by our favorite governor, Pete Wilson. Had it been signed, of course, the feds would have had to decide if they were going to bust doctors.
Well, I guess maybe the governor made a good move, because if he did legalize it for California, you'd probably have so many thousands and millions of people coming here that the weight would probably just drop California right off into the ocean. But I think if you look at what our deficit is in taxes and all around the world, I think there's a good way of stopping all that by just legalizing it. Well, are we going to smarten up, or are we going to still stay stupid? I think they want us to be stupid. They want us to be oppressed. And I think it's time for somebody to make a call.
Yeah, there are two initiatives to re-legalize marijuana. One is for medical purposes, and the other is more broadly. And if you want information about those, I guess I would suggest you call that same number, the Cannabis Club, because I don't have the number of the organizations seeking to legalize it, but the Cannabis Club number is 429-8819, and they can certainly give you information around that issue or direct you to the right number. Pebbles remembers that the last constitutionality change was in 1979, when the right to use marijuana in the privacy of your home was struck down. But then in 1982, the Medical Academy of Sciences nationally issued a 200-page clean bill of health for marijuana, a report called Marijuana and Health. And this is the basis in her mind for challenging the constitutionality of the law, the state law that she transporting marijuana, which is being which she was convicted under, on medical grounds. There's never really been in her mind a significant medical challenge. She already has done jail time in Maine. She got a 6-month sentence for misdemeanor possession. That was the maximum. She got the maximum because of a previous Sonoma case where she got an 8-month jail sentence for felony transportation because she was seen as a repeat offender. And more important, she denied the plea bargain. They offered her 2 weeks in jail and time served, but she would have had to promise not to appeal. She refused to do that because she is going for the Constitution, and she wants to make this an issue that will affect medical marijuana users throughout the country. She served 4 out of those 6 months in that previous sentence, and the Contra Costa case was, she was held on a $150,000 bail, which was finally reduced to $10,000. Why? To teach her a lesson. She said it was low-grade leaf, 2 pounds, and the judge said to her reportedly, quote, "You know what we do with people like you, people who don't get it? This is what we do," hence the high bail. She says, nonetheless, she's going to go to the court with joints in her pockets, and she says she feels more protected having the joints in her pockets. She wants her friend with her at all times, as I say, her medicine. The Contra Costa Times and the West County Times have covered this case before. They may be covering it today. She's also doing a civil suit, refiling that suit with an attorney who offered to take the case into L.A. Federal District Court. And this suit was previously dismissed because they didn't show up at status conferences. They have 36 different constitutional violations of the war on drugs, everything from religious, racial discrimination, entrapment, mandatory minimums, forfeiture laws, urine tests, jury discrimination. She has been out of jail since October 7th. We hope she stays out of jail, but she feels like she's not destined to remain out of jail. We will try to give you an update on what is happening to her on the Monday show. We're talking Pebbles. Shaming women, fighting for rights of people everywhere to use medical marijuana, going before a court today. And that is what's happening with her. We also have a continuing break from my fine, mellifluous voice that may get a little tedious after a while, and that is our old friends, the Capitol Steps. Let's hear a little bit more from them.
PBS's budget will be zero. Watch the Congress pluck our TV hero. Pack up all those feathered clothes. Hit the road, pointy nose. Bye-bye, paper. PBS, what a commie quad. Liberal show, that's all they got. Left-wing paper. If their budget funding isn't carried, Bert and Ernie finally can get married. We know every puppet trick. That's sick. Barney, bye-bye.
Hey, give me the bird. Wait, not the bird. Sure, the dinosaur's history, but the bird is in. Yeah, this big bird can make you rich in the right market niche.
Big bird, fearless.
No more teaching alphabets. Let him sell cigarettes.
Big bird.
We'll buy peas and carrots from Big Bird's eye.
Let's divide his profits up in thirds, guys.
He needs a series, his own show.
Big Bird 90210. Big Bird!
Hey, I can hook you up with with Feather Locklear.
Bye-bye!
Now, the Capital Steps present a reading from How the Gingrinch Stole Congress. Every liberal in Libville liked Congress a lot. But Gingrinch, who did not like Libville, did not. It could be his head turned too far to the right, or he pulled in his belt just a little too tight. But they say the most likely reason of all was his Gingrinchy heart was two sizes too small.
Just look at those orphans,
he said with a smirk.
Why, some of those two-year-olds don't even work. What's more,
he would huff in a Gingrinchy gloat,
I can't even count on their wee little boat. When dealing with orphans, let's not act like chickens. Let's Oliver Twist them. Let's give them the dickens.
Then did social workers whose jobs he was stripping fell victims of Gingrinch's evil pink slipping. You're a mean one, Newt Gingrinch. And your heart's a lump of coal. Next to you, the Huns and Vandals were quite charming on the whole, Newt Gingrinch. Why, they say you're madder than a ditto head at a convention of tree-hugging liberal pinko commies, or even Senator Dole. Without food or shelter, the orphans would make do. Then one day Newt gave them a marvelous breakthrough. Although they had seen Grinch's big budget axe cut, he kindly had won them a
Capital Gains tax cut!
So soon all the orphans were running the nation and starting up orphany conglomerations. They amassed the most marvelous orphany bounty. Too bad all their assets were in Orange County.
And that was another selection from the Capital Steps, A Whole Newt World. Well, another quickie from the internet. Andy Rose is a writer and Fermat Bombs activist up in San Francisco, who keeps abreast of events in San Francisco politics, interests me, and I hope it interests some of you, as to what's going on with the new Brown regime, the Brown administration, Willie Brown, who's supplanted Juggernaut Jordan, the previous mayor, whose matrix programs resulted in the arrests of literally thousands of homeless people on really victimless crimes, nonviolent behavior, but having a backpack, sleeping in the park, occasionally drunkenness, or having an open container, and a massive attempt to remove the homeless from not only downtown San Francisco, but eventually from Golden Gate Park and even from the neighborhoods, essentially shuffling people around, terrorizing them, driving them deeper and deeper underground, as part of really what it seems to be a national trend of gentrification. Get those homeless out of sight, they're to blame for our economic crisis, which of course is ridiculous. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Phone number here is 427-3772. I'm Bathrooms Peter Robert, and I will be with you till 1 o'clock today. I've gotten a little extra time, for which thank you. Anyway, Andy Rose from San Francisco sends us this. Channel 3 had a big news day last night. That was actually written on the 18th, so he was talking about the day before yesterday, covering the demotion of Commander Martell to captain. Many of you who attended the San Francisco Union gathering may remember the man driving the purple cop car calling all the shots. He was also the ranking officer, along with Frank Reed, who retired at the Mumia arrests. These were arrests of hundreds of people this summer, essentially for holding a march. And hundreds were arrested on felony charges, held for several days in jail, and then all charges were dropped. It was similar to what Police Chief Hengisto did during the Rodney King demonstrations, arresting literally, well, more than several thousand, I believe, were arrested, including some locals like activist Linda Edwards, who later recovered money from the city of San Francisco for false arrests. I was actually caught up in the sweeps, but slipped through the lines myself. Mayor Brown is really shaking up the San Francisco Police Department. He appointed Lau, the first Chinese-American, to police chief, and the first black to deputy police chief. Also appointed to commander of special operations was a woman, the first of three to rank who is openly gay. Jordan is gone, Rivera is gone, Reed is gone, Martell is demoted, and Food Not Bombs is growing. Lau said he was fulfilling Brown's mandate to diversify the San Francisco PD command. In the process, he booted or demoted or received resignations from some serious Food Not Bombs foes, if you want to call them that. Still in the ranks, promoted is Richard Holder, a 48-year-old African-American who headed up special operations, the folks who brought us Leroy, I'm arresting you for being stupid, Lindo, and Khan, if you were my girlfriend, you wouldn't have this trouble, Johnson. And he's referring us to two notorious officers who harassed women and who are arresting people for serving free food. Around the time I was arrested for serving free food in violation of the court order, and eventually I was convicted on that and sentenced to 2 months in jail, and that sentence has been stayed pending a decision in another case at the California Supreme Court level, which should be coming down in a few months. But I really have exhausted my appeals, so if the California Supreme Court finds against the other case, then I will be going back to court to, in essence, go to jail. Or possibly I'll do make a break for it and start serving food in guerrilla food servings throughout the state. I haven't quite made up my mind. Continuing with Andy Rose's kind of news brief from the internet, also covered was a lunchtime survey and an interview with Keith McHenry. This focused mainly on Keith's personal contributions. He's talking about a Channel 2 show. Keith's personal contributions to Food Not Bombs, describing how he founded the group in Massachusetts and brought it to San Francisco in 1987. The announcer quoted Keith as saying that there are now Food Not Bombs in 120 cities. Channel 2 showed file footage of Keith being arrested, it looked like September 23rd, 1993, and the now infamous Martell statement, they're just trying to make an anarchist statement, we're not going to allow that. The reporter quoted Keith that this lunchtime serving was a test of the Brown administration's policy toward Food Not Bombs. The report also continued the media's policy of stressing the permit issue. Included was a 10-second statement by new DA Terrence Hallinan, who served for Food Not Bombs. Well, supervisor, Terrence Hallinan actually came out, put on a chef's cap, and served with Food Not Bombs, but they wouldn't arrest him, stating that a campaign promise of his was to see that Food Not Bombs got permits. That was juxtaposed with Keith stating that he was a moderate in the group and that some members didn't feel that Food Not Bombs needed a permit to serve food. Since I was watching with someone who is not intimate with Food Not Bombs, I observed a favorable reaction to Food Not Bombs on her part. You guys are hot. I suppose that's good, but three things are clear about this report, and here we have Andy Rose's personal thoughts. One, the press continues to ignore or not cover the fact that Food Not Bombs is consensus-based and continues to promote McHenry as the founder and spokesman for Food Not Bombs. While several volunteers were serving besides Keith, none appeared or were heard from. I should mention that when I've spoken to Keith, he points out that Andy Rose never attends the Food Not Bombs consensus meetings, but I haven't heard from Andy on that, so. Two, the good works and civic contribution of Food Not Bombs is totally ignored in favor of reporting a protest or a test of the new city leadership. The reporter showed a police car driving by, focusing the news on the conflict between Food Not Bombs, Keith, really, and the police, the old administration. The report ended with a quote from Keith stating he had been arrested 86 times. There was no mention of nonviolence or vegetarianism. Three, juxtaposing D.A. Hallinan, who was a friend of Food Not Bombs, talking about getting us a permit with Keith, stating that some people don't think Food Not Bombs needs a permit, creates a sense of conflict which basically works against Food Not Bombs if anyone is pressing enough to notice. I think the reporter would have preferred if the police car stopped and Keith got bagged again, but no such luck. Channel 2 pressed on new police chief Lau about food not bombs and was informed that San Francisco Police Department is going after serious crimes now. Well, that's good news. Good news that the San Francisco Police Department is turning its attention away from serving free food. Whether they are also going to dissolve the Matrix program, dissolve the curfew in the park, at least undo all the repressive steps that the previous administration has taken, this remains to be seen. And I hope we will see some steps in that direction soon in the days ahead. Let's turn now to Berkeley and Julia Vinaigrette, who's a local poet there. But before we do, I note the reappearance in the studio of that controversial commentator, Mishronik. Hi, Mishronik.
Hi, how you doing? I guess I went down the street to go to the bathroom and ran into an AIDS patient. And I discussed the cannabis club that we were talking about him on the air. And he said, yes, they do. In times of pain, they will give out free medical marijuana to AIDS patients. And also, they were mentioning that there is a problem that the people who are growers are trying to charge too much to the people who deliver. And this has been a big problem down there. And that
we're talking at the Santa Cruz Cannabis Club?
Yes.
His number, by the way, if you're interested in, you have an ailment that requires cannabis, is 429-8819.
Right, and bring a note from a doctor and or prove that there's some problem wrong with whatever, and you talk to them and you get that together. But it seems the growers, you know, they have a hard time. They get hit with slugs, with police, with hunters who seem to sniff it out.
Other criminal syndicates nearby.
Right. An occasional deer or two. And, you know, they have their point of charging this or that, but, you know, if they could come to see that this medical marijuana is something that the government has to realize is something well worthwhile, and maybe if their input towards this would help them to realize it. So, what else do we have?
Well, you were going to talk about the Java House again, that continuing subject of controversy. You apparently, in your peacemaker role, have approached Stuart Cooper and Kevin Foer, who run the Java House, and you are proposing, you're at least conveying a proposal from them to anyone. Well, why don't you state it in your own words? What in fact, is the proposal from the management?
The proposal is that anybody who's had a problem and who has been kicked out, this is the time to go back and sit down, have a discussion, and they'll let you in. If you're a continual alcoholic and loud and abusive, don't even bother. But if you have genuine concern and really want to, you know, be a part of this small social group, which is not elitist because there are all types of races there, from dreads to well-groomed. And they want to keep it open so it's not an elitist thing, and that it can be. And their coffee is cheap and probably, to me, the strongest in town, although I've quit coffee now since before Christmas.
Well, that's commendable, Mr. Mick, both your quitting of coffee and this proposal from Stuart and Kevin to reinvestigate cases of people they've kicked out. I told you before, I sort of have a broader interest in securing a larger set of protections for people downtown and other coffee houses, but the more individual coffee houses make reasonable choices and offer the willingness to reassess cases, I think that's certainly a positive step. And I will personally go into the Java House with you probably sometime, I guess Tuesday is what we're shooting at right now, and try to talk to the management and see if we can at least open up this dialogue further. I think it's an important dialogue. I'd like to see the focus, if the Java House is actually willing to do this on a, not just in my case or your case or somebody else's case, but in the case of anyone who was thrown out. If and Stuart seems to me to be in his own way an honorable person, as I said before, he, even though he disagreed with me vitriolically and was attacking me mercilessly as I was attacking Java House policies, nonetheless, I think that, you know, I think we can actually say that something positive came out of the expression of public discontent that happened on December 26th, and of course the repeated references to the Java House struggle that I have mentioned on the air. But I should add, though, that until there is a change in the policy, and I want to make sure that we're not just whistling Dixie here, I'm going to continue to encourage people to bring this issue up to the people at the Java House. I would like to see Wonton Dave Jacobs issued a free bill of health and return to the Java House. I don't think you punish people for smoking marijuana three stores over or a block away. And even though Stewart felt it was done right outside his door, I have also testimony to the effect that that was not the case from Red Top Robert Flory, who I believe, frankly, is also a credible person. So there are a number of issues yet to be discussed here.
And I'd like to discuss a small issue about John on that Christmas Eve night.
John and Leslie of the couple of
right.
Us for one cup of coffee.
One thing is being kicked out, but forcibly thrown out and shoved is another thing. So I think Java House is going to have to look at no more shoving or laying hands on anybody.
I think that's a very reasonable thing to consider, unless, of course, we're talking about some imminent violence, in which case you have a citizen's arrest that might be appropriate.
I agree.
Here we have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, your voice is... I can't hear what you're saying because your voice is too loud. I don't want to be on air.
Oh, that's fine. No, can you hear me now?
It was the other guy.
Oh, my stomach.
Yes. How's this doing?
Better. Okay. Bye.
Okay. Thank you. You want to talk to us about another issue?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You just better pipe down, Mishramik. Let's have a test here. Say something into the mic here.
Testing, yes. Shroomik and on the Ramesh Ramsa Peter Dick Featherman. We'll put the new name Saint in front of all that.
Now, if that is distorted, please give us another call and help us tune in properly, because I don't want all you listeners out there to be somewhat befuddled and just get a wall of sound in your face. Anyway, so the Java House issue is coming along. There are, of course, other businesses downtown that are discriminating. We want to find out who they are. We want to encourage them not to do it. We think the more we raise our voices at particular businesses,